Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. It is Wednesday, the 22nd of May, 2019. I have with me today a couple of guests to talk about a couple of topics. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hello again.
It's like you were just here. And weren't you talking to us about an exposed database of information or something?
Yes, this? But not today. Hooray.
Well,
you know. Well, Andrew won't be talking about it. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Also with me today, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello. Afternoon.
Yes. And how are things in the future?
Yeah, no, it's good. It's sunny in the future.
Excellent. That's what we like to hear. So our first topic today is, Andrew, you're here to actually talk to us about advertising. So there's something new in Safari that we are seeing.
Yeah, it's not in the official Safari app yet. Mm-hmm. It is introduced in Safari Technology Preview 82. Okay. I forget if we're on 81 or 82, but it's going to be in 82 and in subsequent releases. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting because so far Apple has kind of limited what ads can do in Safari, but this seems to be going kind of a step further where they're trying to set a standard for how some apps ads work.
Okay.
So this new technology that they're coming out with is called privacy preserving ad click attribution.
Well, that sounds exciting.
Yeah. So basically, you know, I'm sure we've all experienced this where you're looking at a product on Amazon, for example, and then you go to another website and you see an ad for that same product or a similar one. Yeah. So these ads follow us around the web. This is going to try to stop that. So basically, ads wouldn't be able to. Well, I mean, Safari already kind of prevents ads following you. So what this does, it's kind of making sure the ads don't have a lot of personally identifiable data, so they don't really know who you are. So basically, if you click on an ad, it won't know. Like, it will know that it was clicked on, but it won't know who. Like, it's not going to be able to build this advertising profile about you.
Okay.
And it can know, like, what you clicked on. It can know if you, what they call a conversion. So a conversion mm-hmm. can be putting your address and information in a form. It could be adding their product to a shopping cart. So it can know if you made a conversion, but that's it.
Okay.
And it's interesting because this click data is sent through private browsing. So it's not associated with your other regular browsing.
Okay. So unless you actually take action on something, if you just go like scroll through a list of things on Amazon, that's not going to change anything. But if you add it to a cart or sign up for a newsletter or something, that information will come through. But none of the other stuff will actually track across other websites like you have now.
Yeah, that's all what right. It sounds like. A lot of technical stuff in here.
Yeah. When it comes to stuff like this, they tend to get real technical real fast because there's a lot of parameters that they have to worry about, you know, and being able to define everything. So generally stuff that rolls out in the previews will trickle down to a release eventually, and you'll get a software update to Safari at some point that might include some technology like this. This is how the other do not track and other ad fighting or ad blocking, I guess, not really fighting them, but just sort of limiting them. This is how all of that stuff happened. It showed up in a technology preview, and this is replacing. It's gonna. It has escaped me what the previous one was, but there was one that was deprecated. The do not track, I think, option, something like that in Safari that went away.
Uh-huh.
And we talked about it and went well. Yeah, I mean, it's a bummer it's going away, but it's not going to change anything for anybody because no one used it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice that they're continuing to try. That's the thing that I like about this is that it's another thing that Apple can point to as pro-consumer privacy and helping people only helping people be more aware and have more control over who has their data in whatever form that takes, whether it's casual web surfing or not. So I'm interested to try this out, and I'm curious what the preferences are going to look like for it, for how you can adjust these sorts of things. But once it's something available to everyone and is no longer in preview and something that's just actually part of Safari, I'm looking forward to using it actually. Charlotte, how about you?
It is something I would possibly use. What interests me actually is that Firefox made a similar or related private browsing update yesterday. So I wrote about how that Firefox is getting much faster. But within that update, they also talked about privacy, and it kind of chimes in with what Apple is doing with Safari here. So one of the things they introduced in the latest version of Safari, the latest version of Firefox, is digital fingerprint tracking. They're blocking that.
Okay.
So that you can't have that thing where your digital fingerprint is tracked around the web, which I think is quite interesting. They also, slightly unrelated, they're going to stop crypto mining as well, you know, where people use your power and energy to mine cryptocurrency. But this kind of move towards blocking tracing you across the internet seems to be becoming more prominent, whether it's through ads in the way Andrew is describing in Safari, or you know, dealing with digital fingerprinting as Mozilla are doing with the latest version of Firefox.
And so far it seems pretty good. I mean, it's nice to see that that at least a couple of the browsers anyway are looking at ways to implement some sort of masking information and preventing some of this stuff from being really insidious.
Right. So I think what we always need to remember when we discuss these issues on this kind of show is that for most people, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Most people are not going to read the technical tests and technical previews that Andrew has spent time going through. They're not going to read through the small details of a Firefox update like I have. And they might not even choose to deploy these options. But for the people that it does matter to, it's really important.
Right.
And I think that's where who you're winning over with these moves.
Exactly.
People are increasingly concerned about privacy. They don't even like that thing, you know, that people used to be shocked about, where you click on something on Amazon and then suddenly it follows you around the internet.
Yeah.
People are getting sick of that stuff. And so these browsers, in a way, are totally responding to that. And for the people that it matters to, like I say, it matters a lot.
Yeah. And part of why I was curious about the preferences is because it may just be something that shows up with some really plain language. And that's one of the things that Apple's really good at, is presenting something technical in a not super technical way. So it'll say, like, you know, this is preventing ad blocking, you know, this is preventing ads from tracking information about you across websites or, you know, across ad networks or things like that. And then it'll be something very easy for somebody to enable. And if they have any questions, they can talk to somebody who regularly runs technology previews of Safari or reads WebKit specifications or digs into Mozilla release notes, which is great.
Are you feeling my cynicism from this side of the Atlantic?
A little bit.
You're telling me that a tech company is going to explain something technical in plain language so normal users can understand it?
Well, Apple's been pretty good at making, or at least making that stuff sound pretty straightforward. Like Apple Pay, for example. There's a whole lot that goes into Apple Pay, and most people probably can't explain it, but lots of people use it and they're comfortable with it because of the way it was described to them.
As I say, lol.
Well, while we're on the topic, Charlotte, of having faith in technology companies, let's talk a little bit about Google.
Oh, guys, they've done it again. the thing where the big technology company stores people's passwords in plain text. Remember that thing? Yeah, that happened again. So Google has stored some, including actually some, at least one connected with TMO, passwords for G Suite, not at gmail.com email addresses. Everyone stop freaking out now. But these are business enterprise G Suite accounts. They stored the passwords in plain text from 2005.
So not just more than a decade, nearly a decade and a half.
Like 14 years or something of just chilling out in plain text. Now, it's okay. Nobody panic, because they did stay in the Google encrypted environment. So that's good.
So basically, that means no one outside of Google had access to these. Possibly employees, I'm not sure.
That's what we understand at this stage, is that that is certainly Google's argument at this stage. Yeah, that's exactly right. And but
the overall storage was an encrypted setup, and so...
But the passwords themselves was just chilling in plain text.
Yeah, that you have to be, like, internal to, like, inside Google system, you know, whether you're in a Google office building or not, I suppose. You have to have some sort of legitimate access to the to their own network in order for this to be
that is kind of what the blog post Google posted seems to indicate. Mm-hmm.
That makes it so much better that only a whole bunch of people had access to these passwords and not just anybody.
And also because no encrypted system's ever been broken into before, right. So it's fine.
Yeah.
I'm actually sort of, I'm really sick of talking about this stuff because we've discussed it with Facebook. And Instagram, obviously owned by Facebook. I don't understand how these technology companies keep getting this stuff wrong. I simply cannot get my head around it anymore. I'm actually kind of sick of it. Like, you are asked, you know, when we were discussing this off air, Kelly, you said, oh, so not only is it Google mucking up, I was like, oh yeah, but it's not Gmail. You were like, yeah, it's the stuff people pay for. This is a paid for high end service that people run their companies on.
Mm-hmm.
How is this? I'm sorry, I don't want to do a kind of pseudo John Martorello rant, but seriously, how the hell is this possible from these companies?
Well, and the thing that strikes me about this is, like I said, you know, yeah, this isn't Gmail accounts. This is what people are paying for. And you know who else uses a lot of G Suite stuff? Google Apps for education. So sure. Maybe this is school information. I don't know. You know, account information for minors, which, you know, is a whole separate thing.
It's a very interesting question. I don't know the answer. I didn't see any of that stuff within the blog post.
They're not going to say.
But that's a very interesting point. I think even if it's not that, which is a different kind of serious, the fact that people are running their businesses with accounts that people stored it, you know, that a big technology company in the world that you would thought could handle this stuff had ended up storing in plain text is totally unacceptable.
And I think
they say at this stage they have not noticed any inappropriate access or misuse of this data.
Okay. That's helpful.
Good. But we also remember, you know, Facebook very quietly giving an update on this stuff. Mm-hmm. They sort of admitted it and then very quietly updated. This is one to watch. I think look, maybe in a way it's a good thing that we're starting to hear about this stuff because people are now taking it seriously, but I don't understand how it happened in the first place.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. For me, I think part of it is that we've become less patient with these sorts of things because it was a really easy thing to sort of, you know, 5 years ago even, you know, we've been hearing about it for way longer than 5 years. I know, but it's a nice arbitrary mark I can draw in the sand, right? So even 5 years ago, like, well, data breaches are, you know, tools that people use inside companies to manage information, to secure accounts, like all that stuff is really complicated and I don't really know a lot about it. So I can see where like somebody particularly clever had to go to some sort of extraordinary length to get a hold of this information. Right. And, you know, that used to be sort of the stance on this was like, oh, well, it took some technological genius to be able to find their way around this system and find the vulnerability in it and be able to get in and get access to data that they weren't supposed to have. And that used to be a very easy thing to sort of decide, like, yeah, this stuff is really technical and complicated. And, you know, and what we're finding out now is because to me, like, this is the sort of thing, like, not bothering to put a password on something like this, to me, just smacks of laziness, number one. But number two, the world, like, you know, all of the people who are listening to this show, all of the people that those people interact with, like, who find these things out, we are improving on a fundamental technological level all the time. So I understand, you know, 5 years ago, lots of people, there, some percentage of people 5 years ago didn't know what it meant to hear a password stored on a cloud service or a database stored on a cloud service didn't have a password and anybody that had access to that server could have accessed it. Like 5 years ago, that would have been not even English necessarily to a good portion of people. And the number of people to whom that doesn't track is smaller now because people are getting more technologically savvy. People are understanding things like Dropbox and iCloud storage and Google Drive and OneDrive and understanding the concept of cloud storage and understanding the concept of security. And so I think part of it is, number one, there's less patience with this stuff because we hear it so often. And number two, it's that we know how easy it would be for that not to happen because we're evolving technologically all the time and understanding more of how this stuff works, more of how these things are used, and more of the repercussions of what happens when people who shouldn't have my data have it.
And right. Let's just be clear, there is no excuse for storing passwords.
No.
In plain text.
Let's start there.
Stay within a encrypted environment. Look, I think it's right and proper that I just take a moment, if you don't mind, Kay, to actually read out
Absolutely.
What Google wrote. Mm-hmm. So they say they made an error when implementing, I think, the hashing functionality back in 2005. They said that basically the admin console stored a copy of the unhashed password. This practice did not live up to our standards, they say. But they emphasize these passwords remained in our secure encrypted infrastructure. This issue has been fixed and we have seen no evidence of improper access to or misuse of the affected passwords. Another question that jumps to my mind when I read this stuff is how on earth it took this long to discover it was a problem.
Right.
I can understand when you're implementing something new years ago, you make mistakes. Okay, that happens. I don't understand how it takes you 14 years to work it out.
Exactly.
When you're Google.
When you're anybody.
Maybe when you're anybody, but when you're Google with the resources and capability and quality of employees and staff that you have there, I do not understand.
Right.
I find it totally mind-boggling that it takes you this long to even work it out.
Mm-hmm. I just like how they say, we're sorry, like what happened doesn't live up to our standards. That doesn't live up to anyone's standards. Are you serious?
Yeah, right.
Well, I think what they're trying to do is let us know that they have standards, such as they are.
Hope.
She goes on to say, this is one of the VPs, Suzanne Frey. In addition, as we were troubleshooting new G Suite customer sign-up flows, we discovered that starting January 2010, we had inadvertently stored a subset of unhashed password in our secure encrypted infrastructure. These passwords were stored for a maximum of 14 days. This issue has been fixed.
So we've only been doing this for 9 years?
So they found a thing in January 2009 that was unhashed passwords stored for 14 days.
Okay.
For new customers.
So 10 years. Oh, so if it had made it to 11 years.
Figure came from.
Yeah.
I mean.
So I know, maybe 10 years is the standard. Like, we only keep them in plain text for a decade.
No. So just because these are two separate issues. One issue is new customer signups. They found password stored unhashed for 14 days.
Okay.
Another one is the original issue is the original issue of passwords stored in plain text.
Yeah.
All right. So there's two different things happening where Google did something stupid with people's passwords.
It appears so.
Okay.
Yeah.
14 days versus 14 years.
Yeah. Maybe it's the 14 days that wasn't up to their standards. They weren't keeping them for long enough. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, again,
the original problem is to do with the sign-in system.
Mm-hmm.
So one issue is with the sign-in system, another is with the sign-up system, it appears.
Okay. So this is another time when we remind you should use a password manager. You should go through your password manager and look at the time your passwords were last updated. And if you've been using the same password for about a year, it's probably time to refresh it. One of the nice things about password managers is they will generate them for you. And one thing that I find really convenient when I have long, complicated passwords is I like to use, they call them pronounceable, I think, in a couple of different password managers. So you get like a group of words. So it's more like a passphrase instead of a password. So you type in like three or four random words and maybe you have percent signs between them or other sorts of punctuation. And if you ever have to enter that information by, looking it up in your password manager, but having to type it manually someplace else, because that happens once in a while, at least it's much easier to type than the long string of random characters. And it's just as secure if you use pronounceable words and all of that. They end up being just as secure, especially if you throw in a capital letter here and there and you add a little bit of punctuation in between, things like that. It makes those things much, much more secure. So if nothing else, maybe try something like that. I know, I want to say it's LastPass. I know 1Password has a feature that will show you like, All of these logins all have the same password, or this is the last time that they were all updated, and it's been more than whatever amount of time, and so it shows them all to you. And I think LastPass has a similar feature, and I think Dashlane might have something similar as well. So at least, sit down and kind of look through them. Look through your iCloud passwords as well. Just sort of make sure that you've got... That what you've got in there has been refreshed recently so that you can make sure that some of this stuff, at least if it does happen, then nobody has the password that you're using today. Yeah. Because that's the other reason this stuff can come back and get you.
I don't know about other password managers, but I like how 1Password will tell you like the age of each password. Because I think for proper password etiquette or hygiene, you're supposed to update them once a year, I think.
I think something like that, yeah. So just to make sure that it is something different than it was before, and just sort of keep those refreshed. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's an easy thing to do. You can sort them by, the date on the password and things like that. There's lots of ways to kind of slice and dice that stuff within your password manager and see. Like, all those places I thought, when I signed up for all those accounts, when I was being particularly clever and using my cat's name backwards, maybe I should change some of those. Yeah, you should. I hate to be the one to break it to you, but yeah, you totally should.
The key part of the issue with the G Suite issue is that it can't, the functionality they didn't put in properly. They say the bit that allowed administrators to upload or manually set user passwords for their company's users. So they said the intent was to help them with onboarding new users. But that was to do with account recovery, and that no longer exists. But those were the password, it appears, that was set.
Okay.
That were stored incorrectly. So it's all to do with this sign-in system and how administrators could support and have on board new users. And there's basically a load of passwords that were stored in plain text.
Fabulous. Well. Yeah, we have a whole lot more to say about this but we're going to say it once we stop recording so that we don't end up with an explicit tag on the show today.
Yeah.
So, at least in the short term, we're going to leave it there. We've given you some tips. You've got some other stuff to talk about. If you have tips about password management or password updating, any of that sort of stuff, we love to hear it. We like to highlight that kind of stuff when people write in with something particularly clever. You can do so by emailing us at observations@macobserver.com if you like to kick it old school. You can leave a comment in the show notes, and you can find us at TMO Daily on Twitter. I'd like to thank both of you for being here today. Andrew, thanks for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Charlotte, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.